This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
What's up, guys? Danny Carlson here with the Actualize Freedom podcast. And there has been change afoot in the Amazon space when it comes to reviews, when it comes to seller feedback, and making sure that you have social proof for your products so you can actually sell and have a high conversion rate. So who better to bring on the podcast than the very first double guest podcast? We got Mr. Michael Malgar and Ty Walters here from Seller Smile. And they have a ton of experience when it comes to dealing with Amazon customer service, for getting reviews, for making sure you don't get negative reviews, and I'm sure a whole bunch of other reasons that they're about to tell us. So welcome, guys. The first question that I would like to pose to you is, there has been some change when it comes to Amazon reviews, right? Like leaving different feedback scores. Just for people who are concerned about that don't really know what that means yet, can you explain to them what that means? Like, what is the change? What does that really mean as far as feedback and reviews?
First of all, Danny, thank you for having Michael and I on the podcast. I'm a big fan, especially your episode with Casey Goss was amazing. If your listeners haven't heard that one, go back and check it out. Michael and I, we have a software, a customer service company in the e-commerce space. We came from a software background, and so we're well aware of the space of reviews and feedback and how Amazon may change their policies frequently. Now, if I could ask a clarifying question, changes for reviews, are you referencing a rating of seller feedback and how it's more difficult to get negative reviews removed because we've seen this? Or is your question more around product reviews rather and maintenance in that?
Yeah, I think there's been some confusion among sellers. Like, the product reviews, from my knowledge, haven't really been changed a whole lot. It's more the seller feedback score.
Certainly.
There's just people buzzing in Amazon Facebook groups talking about this. So just provide some clarity. Like, what actually is that change? And then how is it affecting what people should be doing?
So two of the most notable recent changes, and this is as of, you know, our recording today, there might be some massive news drop today with just how often this sort of things tends to change. But one of the more recent changes that we've seen a lot of our clients with even struggling with is the how Amazon is being a little bit more hesitant to remove neutral or negative seller feedback. It used to be where if you had a seller feedback that was actually more of a product review or some of the language that the person who left the feedback used is something that could have previously been removed by Amazon's team whenever you went to request removal, they've actually become it's actually become much more of a difficult task that you go about that now. And if you try to request removal now, they'll come back and say, actually, we found that this is not in violation of our terms. Here's why. Sometimes it seems that you receive an automated response, so you don't really even know if like the person on the other end is actually checking. And right away, one of the things that we'd recommend is whenever you are requesting removal, if they come back and say, no, we're not going to remove this because of X, Y, and Z, go ahead and reopen this case and try to be as clear as you possibly can. Try to explain it as much as you can in the sense that, okay, if you believe that the seller feedback should be removed because it's actually a product review, take a moment to specify what part of the text actually is indicating that it's more of a product review rather than a seller feedback, and try to explain that and say, this is in violation of this policy. We've found that to be our best practice when processing this on our end, because the more that you can just clearly outline this, the better, the less likely you are to have that denied again.
And what kind of percentage are you guys seeing success rate with this? Is it still a very hit or miss thing, or what are you guys seeing?
It's even then, it's a very, very hit or miss thing. I mean, it kind of depends on the day. There's days where where perhaps the feedbacks that we open are very straightforward. They tend to be removed. There's other times where it's not as straightforward, and it just doesn't. You know, even after repeated attempts, we'll try to clearly outline it even further. It still isn't removed. So it's honestly, it tends to be hit or miss.
Another way we manage this, sorry for interrupting, Michael, is that with our clients, we'll keep some sort of shared tracker. This is usually in the form of a Google sheet. And in there we can list the seller feedback in question, the date we took certain actions on it. And we'll have a maybe a 2 to 4 step workflow where our team is working on getting this removed. If it reaches a point where it still is persisting there, we'll usually escalate or alert the account contact, which is usually the business owner. And hopefully at that time, they have another idea on how they could escalate this situation further. Sometimes they have a contact with an account manager, who can escalate that issue within Amazon. So there's a variety of ways to handle it, but unfortunately, it's affecting a wide array of sellers.
And I have an interesting question for you guys. Are you guys seeing any real black hat stuff come up now that this change has happened? It kind of opens up a black hat opportunity for a bunch of negative seller feedback. And in the past, maybe if you got some company from India, SEO ranked company from India, to leave a bunch of negative feedback, it'd be pretty easy to get it removed because it's obviously fake. But now it's probably a lot easier to do something like that. Have you guys been seeing that with any accounts that you manage or have been seeing that at all?
You know, the interesting thing about this is that it tends to affect select clients of ours, in the sense that there's like certain niches that they're a part of that just have much more black hat activity going on. It with some of our clients, it doesn't affect them at all. We don't really see that happening, or we might see it very, very rarely. But from our current experience, based on what we've seen, it doesn't seem like people are taking advantage of it that way. Hopefully that's a very low number or low percentage of sellers who are being affected by that. Hopefully we're not putting it out into the ethos that this is what's going to happen now, but it is something.
Don't get any ideas, guys.
Yeah, don't do it. But you know, as always, we kind of see it as a way that Amazon just trying to continually refine their shopping experience. They know that it's something that can be easily gamed, and so they're just trying to keep working. And you know, a lot of sellers are sometimes a few steps ahead. They're kind of doing something different. But that is one thing that you can that is one way that you can tell that Amazon's trying to refine their shopping experience. Another thing, kind of touching back on your original question, was we're also seeing this happen with the request a review action. This is something that came out in the last couple of months, and when it did come out, there was a lot of buzz about, oh, maybe this is Amazon trying to get rid of third-party messaging, you know, being able to send messages through buyer-seller messaging to request for review, request for feedback. There has been people coming out to say, like, yeah, Amazon's doing away with this. Amazon hasn't stated anything publicly about this just yet. Some people say they have insiders who have claimed this. We don't doubt that this is something that they might eventually do, especially if they're trying to go down the route of requesting a review through the orders page. But again, this is just another way where Amazon's trying to legitimize the shopper's experience as much as possible. They don't want multiple sellers spamming their you know, Amazon's customers with, you know, emails to leave a review, to leave feedback. Again, kind of they're tackling this from a seller feedback perspective and a product review perspective.
Yeah, if I could add to that point,
makes sense. There's it's pretty much what's happening in all messaging platforms, like Facebook Messenger is doing a similar thing. I think as of the recording of this podcast is coming up in a few weeks, where they're changing all of their subscriber base. If you have Facebook Messenger subscribers, you're only really going to be able to send them a very specific follow-up message within a certain time frame, unless it's specifically an order update, right? They don't want people spamming all of their list. Amazon's email list is incredibly, incredibly valuable. If you had an email list like that, you don't want other random people spamming people on that list. Sellers, I'm sure you see sellers doing all sorts of stuff within Amazon's email system, and it's ruining Amazon's prized customers, right?
And it ruins it for everyone, because then Amazon, unfortunately, then decides they have to create a policy or create more process to prevent that sort of thing from happening. For example, I know it's a very common strategy to get people to using systems like ManyChat, for example, where you get people to come and like leave a review by funneling them through Facebook and then taking them to Amazon to leave a review. And perhaps in some ways we've seen like fraudulent sellers trying to perhaps, gamify that system, where they're offering some sort of compensation in order to do that. I can see that being a strategy that Amazon will eventually at some point come around to as well. Anytime that there's any sort of like gray hat tactic that's affecting the shopping experience, I would say that the days are numbered, because it affects the shopping experience. Amazon knows that that's not something that shoppers want to deal with. They don't want to be spammed.
undermines Amazon's ranking algorithm. It also undermines Amazon's ranking algorithm if these products are artificially being boosted through the using these creative funnels and workflows that are against terms of service in a certain way. The products that are not supposed to be at the top will be, and they'll be into the hands of the customers, which deserve actually the better product if the level, if the playing field was level.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And there's, you know, there's really no arguing that a lot of these tactics are against Amazon terms of service. I know some people would argue that with many chatbots and offering some kind of incentive through a many chatbot, that Amazon can't see a many chatbot. Like, I mean, but that's ridiculous. Of course, someone could potentially go through that many chatbot and see that one of your customers could take a screenshot of it, and or one of your competitors, even, especially one of your competitors, can go through your funnel and take a screenshot, send it into seller support and all that stuff. And I have a good source that has told me that Amazon has an internal team that is dedicated to keeping up with what sellers are doing. And of course they would be doing this, right? Of course it makes sense that they have a team of people going through all these Amazon courses and figuring out what are all the crazy black hat things that people are doing so that they can stay on top of it and combat it on their system, so that their system is actually showing the best product to the customers, right? So got to be careful with that kind of stuff, guys.
Absolutely. And,
yeah. The next thing I want to ask you guys about, you guys are experts on actually keeping the customers happy and keeping them happy enough to get reviews, right? It all kind of ties into, it all kind of just ties into a good customer service experience. So if there is some fundamentals to providing that experience for everyone's customers on Amazon where they're going to be happy, they're not going to leave negative feedback, if they have something wrong, they're going to talk to you about it, they're not going to leave that negative review and hopefully leave a positive review. How do you manage that? Like, what are the fundamentals of setting something like that up?
Yeah, if I could start that off, the fundamentals of a good experience like this are universal across experiences. And what we've found is that a good experience is fast, it's correct, it's friendly, and it's proactive. So fast, you don't have to wait a day, 48 hours for your answer. It's either instant or within a few minutes. Correct is that not only is it getting to me fast, but I got the information that I need and that I was requesting in order to make my decision. If it's a purchasing decision, if it's moving forward with a return request or a warranty claim, I got the correct information I need as a customer to move it forward. The next one is friendly. We can be fast and correct, but if it sounds robotic and sterile and plain and boring, it's like customer's not going to feel emotionally engaged with that conversation. So we stress with our team when we're training all the time, and there's certain key points to hit. Addressing the customer by their first name. Use your emojis. Put a smiley face in there if it's a lighthearted topic. Really connect with them. Pull out a detail from their response. Did they talk about this was a gift for their daughter? Are they taking this on their hiking trip? Things like that to connect. And then proactive. Looking ahead as the brand or the product expert, as the customer service expert, and anticipating what else might this customer ask? What else might they need? And instead of waiting for them to come back in another interaction, we're going to go ahead and provide it for them near the end because it's not the most important part. And then always a single clear call to action. Here's what to do next. We look forward to your reply. Something like that. Outside of that, Michael and I, we've been doing this for a while, about 3 years now. So we have a lot of tips and tricks, you could say, of best practices and how to do this at scale. But those are the core elements, I would say, that equal a good experience online.
Yeah, I want to add to that. And there's a slight disadvantage to being a seller in the sense that you might lose touch with what being a buyer feels like, what all those touch points are like. So, you know, there's all these customer touch points that start out from just even like your Amazon listing, right? I've talked about this a lot in the past before. We could, you know, we've done some content around this as well. But even just, you know, the type of information that you provide on your listing, there's a lot of focus on making sure it's like optimized for like listing optimization so that whenever whenever people are searching for it, they can get to it. But there's an equal amount of, in my opinion, equal amount of importance in being able to provide helpful information right off the start, right? So one of the biggest points of contention that we see is, for example, when sellers have like a sizing guide, being able to clearly communicate that information, perhaps providing like reference material, providing if you have a product image, you might be able to use something as a comparison, like if there's a size involved with like the size of your product. But all that being said, it comes back down to something that we like to refer to all the time because it's coming straight from Amazon, Amazon's first leadership principle. And this can be found if you look, if you go to amazon.jobs, their very, very first leadership principle listed is something called customer obsession. It says, leaders start with the customer and work backwards. They work vigorously to earn and keep customer trust. Although leaders pay attention to competitors, they obsess over customers. So if you look at that as essentially a concept, a framework to work backwards from, this is essentially how you can start making decisions. It's not about what's the quickest way to get a review, but it's more about how do I earn someone's trust and create a lifelong buyer from that.
Yeah, with some real humanity to it. I think that's really important. And you touched on a really interesting point, which is which is actually having the listing be optimized in the first place. And I see that pretty often, you know, Kenji ROI doing as much listing optimization as we do. We had an interesting example actually of a client who we got their product photos back and they came back and they're unhappy. They're like, whoa, like it, like in all the photos, my product looks like this. And it's like that, we can't have this, like it, that you can't show this part of the product. And it's, we had to talk to them like, that's actually what your product looks like. If we go and edit out all of that like ugly looking part of your product, there's going to be a difference between the expectation all of your customers have and what shows up in the box of their house. That's not good. You're asking for a 1-star review. So like, sure, we got a graphics team that can make your product look amazing and way better than it actually is, but that's probably a bad idea. What do you guys think about that?
Your customers are not stupid. You know, it's normal everyday people like ourselves. You know, if you ever need something, and I mean, right after this call, I might need to go and buy dog food, right? I want to be able to trust who I'm buying from, and I'll look at things like seller feedback to see how they handled that interaction in the past. It's trust is such a core component of a purchasing experience in that it seems like, you know, like this philosophical concept, but it's really not. It just comes down to being very, as you mentioned, very straightforward, very clear and concise about what they're getting, things to look out for, and that'll help prevent issues in the future. That'll help prevent a return. It won't hurt like your return rate. That'll help create more repeat buyers. And it just kind of all feeds into it.
Awesome. And Ty, you touched on this a little bit as well. Doing this at scale, this is something that you guys obviously have to have immaculate systems in place to fulfill for so many different sellers at the same time. So you probably have some great tips that could be applied to small to medium to even large size e-commerce businesses. So what are some of these principles or systems that you guys have in place when it comes to managing things at scale with, you know, dozens of messages, or sometimes I'd imagine like more than 100 messages a day on a single account?
Certainly. Yeah. Let's just start at the place that customer service is a 7-day a week job. Amazon has set that precedent and they're expecting sellers to be there. So realistically, just at that fact, it's no longer a one person job. And we still see many business owners with one customer service expert on the team working 7 days a week all year long. So we believe that's unsustainable. We need to spread that knowledge out a little bit. So first step to being efficient is have redundancies in your agents. You have multiple people on your team that can perform the same type of work. This is difficult because there are differences in personal knowledge and experience with e-commerce in general. And with Seller Smile, that's what we try to do, is create this environment where we're constantly training and we're having these expert guided sessions. One agent might instruct the others and it's on this rolling basis. So not only can we be really efficient, but we can also be up to date on the newest changes in the inventory or any changes to the business. So Michael and I, if you're familiar, we have a product management background where we're running different types of planning systems. This is Scrum and Agile. And these systems are set up to be as efficient as possible, where the vitals are covered in the most efficient amount of time. And we're meeting with a really nice schedule. It's short stand-up meetings right away in the morning, and then larger meetings throughout the week. So if we're very intentional about the way that we plan our time as an entire team, when we do get together, we can cover the important things that matter so we can deliver customer service at a high level.
And related to that is how all this information needs to be kept in one central location. It can be linked to other areas, but for example, in our case, we have what we call the standard operating procedure document for each of our clients. And this is a living document that we might update possibly even on a daily basis, depending on how much is going on with this account. But that might be a place where we keep information about the products, maybe things that are not necessarily public, but elaborate a bit more on how to use your product or best, best use, like tips. But on top of that, it might also include processes for what happens if someone's order is reported as lost or is reported as stolen, or if someone wants to return their order due to X or X, Y, and Z, kind of essentially creating a decision tree of things to do and responses to use based on that. Now, when we talk about that, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a canned response that you just send every single time. Instead, you have a process in place for how to handle that scenario. You might use pieces of a canned response, but again, we don't want to understate the importance of customizing your responses, because you do want to make sure that everything is touching on the things that the customer mentioned, so to show them that you actually cared to read their case, read through their interaction, and kind of learn from that. But anyway, all that being said, you take all that information and then you keep it updated consistently. Anytime that you learn anything new that needs to be updated, you come back and update it, and you have a process in place to do so. And that feeds into your ticketing systems.
And that skill, once these processes are set in stone, or not set in stone, but at least defined well enough, there's no question about what our team needs to do to take action or the next action on a given case. There's so much time lost in the internal knowledge base, the internal notes. What do I do here? What do I say? So we're trying to get efficiency on that end, but then also having multiple people trained doing blocked check-ins, maybe multiple per day. When you are receiving 100 plus emails a day, checking in maybe 3 or 4 times throughout a 24-hour period is the best way to keep those to a manageable size so you don't build a backlog.
I'll just reiterate as well, like what you said about redundancy. I think that's something a lot of entrepreneurs really underestimate, the importance of that in your entire business. Anything that is super core and key to the business should have redundancy outside of maybe the most important things that you, the business founder or the CEO, are focused on, that you can't have redundancy because it's going to be a 6-figure-a-year salary job. Right?
You want to remove bottlenecks.
Yeah, removing bottlenecks, or just if something happens, right? Employees quit. You have to fire employees for certain things sometimes, or like they're sick, or they go away on vacation for a few days, and the whole business falls apart in 3 days when that key employee is away, and you don't have anyone else in the entire company that knows how to do that position, you're kind of screwed. Right? Exactly. You're going to be scrambling to try to hire someone in a short period of time. You're probably going to make a bad hiring decision. Just not a good thing. So redundancy in every area of the business, I'm a big believer in.
This is why you guys are software. Yeah. So I was going to say, this is why we stress the importance behind documentation, because in our experience, we've worked with many sellers if you're a seller who's doing things right on Amazon, you're probably very savvy and you just have a lot in your head. So you're just used to providing guidance all the time. But as you begin to scale, that's just not going to work. You won't be available there to answer all those questions. So it becomes that much more important that if you find yourself repeating something more than one time, document it. Just go ahead and state it there so that there's a set process in place or a preference in place for how your business should handle that.
Yeah, and another good thing for scale and everything like that, and something I'd imagine you guys with a software background have something figured out, is software and software stack. You guys have your own internal softwares that you've built to help manage this, or do you use off-the-shelf softwares in your stack that maybe other sellers could also use for their own stack?
Absolutely. So this is one of the next big advanced components, especially as you scale, is using a reliable ticketing system. So we've used Salesforce Desk in the past. That's no longer available. We then kind of went through this entire phase where we were looking for the next best solution, whether that's developing it internally or finding another solution. And we actually ended up deciding on a software named Help Scout. And the reason for that is that Help Scout has all the functionality that we were looking for, but it also helps accommodate for creating workflows around different client accounts or even just different brands. So if you sell multiple brands, that might be something that's helpful for you. But using a ticketing system is extremely beneficial because it helps right from the get-go. It helps with team management. If you have, especially as you begin to have more and more interactions a day, it becomes important that you have some sort of hierarchy where maybe you have one customer service lead who's working with a team of several other customer service team members. And so there might be essentially like an escalation process. So having individual team members that you can assign a case to becomes important, and that's a part of the functionality that ticketing systems allow. On top of that, you might also start to use like notes, being able to leave a note on a case and be able to have an ongoing discussion. We use that a lot for if we need to check back up on something. So if someone's initiated a return, they said, hey, we just sent this back. We might leave a case open with a note to check back on the tracking status so that we can issue a refund or go from there as necessary. But all that said, it allows you to create automation workflows, which we think is one of the best features of using a ticketing system, in that as you start to get in there, you'll start to notice things that are just coming up all the time. You can create an automatic workflow to like complete a certain number of actions or complete a set number of actions. Perhaps you want it every time that someone asks about how to use this part of your product, you just have an automatic workflow that, you know, begins a response, adds a note, perhaps it categorizes the message so you can come back and look at that reporting later to see what people, you know, what common categories you might see. Those are the types of things that a ticketing system would allow you to do.
Yeah. So ticketing systems at this point are very well built out. There's not much opportunity for Seller Smile to get into that game. And how we operate right now is with a collection of different softwares in concert with each other. We're talking about Slack, the whole Google suite, Zoom, Help Scout, and we're using all of these together to perform what is still a very manual task for us in responding to these emails. We do have some ideas on how we could make ourselves more efficient, but Michael and I, we both don't code right now, so we'd have to partner with someone who'd be able to achieve that or teach ourselves. So right now, it's still a very manual process that we've assembled using various types of services.
Yeah, and by no means is it really necessary to build your own custom software to have a company these days. Like Kenji ROI has incredibly small amount of custom software, is mostly just pieced together with ActiveCampaign, Service Provider Pro, like just a bunch of really great software services that in total, I think our software bill is somewhere like $400 per month, $500 per month. That's less than a full-time employee in the Philippines, right?
Right
for
on,
all
yeah.
of our software stack that we didn't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars building and maintaining, right? So it's never been more accessible.
And there's just software for everything. So if you think like, oh, I really want to do this, most of the time you'll end up finding something that's like a step ahead of what you're thinking of. And a majority of the time, like we've, like as Ty mentioned, Slack, you know, Google Suite, Help Scout, we connect a lot of this through like Zapier, for example. Zapier is one of our best friends. You can just, you know, create a Zap and it automatically sends actions to Slack or vice versa. But something we haven't really touched on today is kind of like the project management or the product management aspect of customer service. And in our case, we use Trello to essentially keep our ideas logged and kind of groom through them, talk about them, discuss opportunities that we see from our customer service. And that's something that we would provide in our customer service reporting or internally for sellers who are doing something similar. You're essentially using tools like Trello to perhaps keep track of how often something comes up.
And what are you using for? I know you guys don't use complete canned responses, and that's probably a bad idea. And if you think that's a good idea, then just realize that you probably don't like it when Amazon sends you a canned response with no details about why they're doing something on your listing.
Beautifully said.
But I'm sure you guys must use some piece of software or a piece of an existing software for canned responses. Like I have one called Phrase Express that is really great. All I have to do is press Alt Space and it just populates with any number of, I think, over 100 little phrases or sometimes even full email templates that I have there. And I can easily type in the first few letters of that and paste it into an email, into Amazon, into anywhere that I'm talking to someone, Facebook Messenger quite often. What do you guys use for something like that?
So usually we use Help Scout because part of what we didn't really touch on this, but part of what we use Help Scout for is funneling, all the emails from Amazon, email, Walmart, eBay, any of those channels, funneling them all into one place so that you're essentially working off one central location that you're able to keep, where you're able to store that all that information, all the documentation from. And that allows you to use canned responses. But in addition to that, like, as you mentioned, there's Chrome extensions that allow you to do that. We use, Grammarly is one that we use all the time that is more about like, you know, kind of cleaning up the text that you're using. That's a must. It's absolutely free and you guys should use it if you're not already. But also DeepL, DeepL is a Google translator that like is a bit more advanced than Google Translate. If you sell on European marketplaces or non-English speaking marketplaces, that's definitely well worth your time. I'm a Spanish speaker and I've compared Google Translate to DeepL in the past, and it's much, much better in comparison. So that's something to definitely keep in mind. But as you mentioned, all of this feeding into your templated responses, templates are not bad. In fact, they're very, very, they help create more efficiency behind what you're doing. But the important thing is that you don't just use canned responses.
Yeah, I think the vital part about using canned responses inside of our ticketing system is that we can use variables. So we can pull specific unique information from that customer, their first name, their last name, their order ID, whatever information you're collecting. Many, many ticketing systems do this. So you're automatically customizing your canned response or template just with a few of those small additions.
Yeah, definitely a lot of efficiency to be had there. And we're nearing the end of our time on this podcast. This has been super valuable so far, but for anyone who is listening and they're wondering, does it really make sense for them to build a team around customer service? Like, what is the point, in your guys' opinion, where people should be hiring their first person, or they should be like handing things off to an agency as opposed to doing it themselves, right? Because if you're just Joe Schmo in your garage selling 5 units a month, it's not worth it hiring someone. But where is that point that you recommend people make that decision?
So I'd like to just preface that by saying, please take the time to consider that decision. Anytime you're outsourcing something or adding help to your business, it's a significant decision from a privacy standpoint, from a cost standpoint and budgeting. That being said, there are really a solution out there for you, no matter who you are or what you prefer. So I would say to a listener, if they're thinking about this and do I need to pass off my customer service, first of all, how much is the workload? Is it 5 hours per week or is it 50 hours per week? That might tell you about how many people full-time you need to take over that role, especially considering that if you're the best person for that role, you're the most efficient, whoever's going to be filling your place won't be that efficient right away. So don't expect that same level of performance unless you're partnering with an expert or someone that's experienced.
That's something else that what you just touched on, Ty, is the complexity, the nuance involved with your customer service. Even if you are low volume, perhaps you might need to take into consideration, for example, someone who might be more, who could learn more of that information easier. So, for example, we have clients who sell medical supplies. So that requires a very specific nuance. Even though they're lower volume, it's a higher complexity. That is something you want to take into consideration and thinking through like the proper solution for your needs, because it might be that perhaps you can get away with using a VA for this instance, but in other instances, perhaps it becomes a little bit more difficult.
When there's real consequences for the customer service not giving you the right information to someone, just like completely destroyed their hip or something.
Absolutely. And this is your public reputation. So, that's something else you have to think about, is what you're willing to pay for it. What amount of time is it costing you? Are you like the single point of failure on your team? Are there bottlenecks you need to remove? Those are the types of things that you can think about. And in our case, most of the time, we've had clients who approach us and who might be doing it themselves, or we have clients who might have like one or two people doing their customer service. Most of the time, what ends up happening is that we are essentially taking on a lot of the repetitive tasks that need to scale. And the people who are working there already are essentially just freed up to work on other more high value tasks.
Yes, absolutely great advice. And I would say that e-commerce customer service is one of the first things you should be passing off as a business owner, because at the end of the day, that customer service is very important, but that is something that a much lower level employee or team member can handle. And it's probably not something that every team member can handle, finding new products to launch, doing your product research, launching new products, doing the marketing, doing the launch. That is where you as a business owner are the most valuable. So hand off to customer service. I think these guys definitely know what they're talking about here.
Delegate.
Love it, guys. Well, thank you for coming on here. This is a really valuable podcast for everyone. And if people want to reach out to you online and learn more about what you do at Seller Smile, where can they do so?
Yeah, they can go to sellersmile.com. We're about to launch our new website. That's really exciting. We were working on it earlier today. And we're everywhere on social media at Sellersmile Team. So follow us, like our pictures, and we'll interact with you there.
And, you know, just to throw it in there, we like to be very fully transparent in, you know, we will let you know if Sellersmile is the right solution for you. We offer a free consultation, sellersmile.com/schedule, where if you're just curious to know if it's something that's worth your time, we will point you in the right direction. There's times where perhaps it made more sense to go with like a freelancer through like FreeUp, for example, or perhaps they have very specific needs that might need to be accomplished through other methods. We like to be transparent with you because we want to create a long-term relationship with our clients and provide a great customer experience. We need to be able to be fully transparent to do that. So yes, please don't hesitate in reaching out if you ever just want to pick our brains about customer service, or, you know, if you have a challenging customer service task ahead of you, talk to us about it. We'll be happy to help you out.
Awesome. Well, appreciate your time, guys. And if you're looking for any of the resources or links mentioned in this episode, you can find them at actualizefreedom.com. And if you haven't already, go leave a review. I've made it real easy for you guys. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/free. That is /FREE. And it's going to automatically open up the podcast app on your phone, whether you use iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. And it makes it really easy to leave a review, because on Android, it's actually really difficult to find. And there's almost no place on the desktop computer you can go leave a review. So I have removed all the excuses for you guys. If you like this podcast, it's the best way to say thank you. But until next time, guys, show notes at actualizefreedom.com. Go check out Seller Smile and see you guys next time.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroi.com.